Welcome to Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney, a podcast about getting local Kansas City artists on the couch to chat. Hello, 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 and welcome to Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney.
Hello.
I'm Corey.
I'm Courtney.
And today on the show we have one of our very special friends, if not one of my best friends that I love to hold on to, Mr. Dudley. Welcome to the show, Dudley.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Oh my gosh. We have been talking about having you on this show for a good minute. So.
That's true.
I'm really excited that the opportunity and a show that we're both sort of involved in got to bring you here today. So, Dudley, first question is, how the hell did you get to the couch today?
Well, I got to the couch because I met you. And I believe it was 2014 when we did La Cage Folle at the Barn Players Community Theater, back when they were over on... In Mission.
Yeah, on Martway.
On Martway. Yeah. And we did La Cage Folle, and I immediately fell in love with you. And really, everybody in that show, it was great fun.
It was a lot of fun.
And since then, have done four or five shows at the Barn and interacted with you and was kind of thrilled when they moved down to the Arts Asylum because it's a much better space.
It's just a different space.
It is a different space.
Yeah.
And it is... exciting to be here, and that's probably how I got to the couch, because of you.
Yeah. It's all your fault.
It's all your fault, Corey. A lot of things in my life are your fault, darling.
Many people have said that before, once or twice. Dudley and I met, during La Cage, and we did not know each other previously.
We did not. I knew who you were.
Mm-hmm. Mostly because of what was written on the bathroom wall.
Well, yeah.
Right.
Believe it all, folks.
For an adequate time call. Oh, sorry. I knew who you were, but we had never really met and gotten to know each other before that.
So. I fell in love with you because in the dressing room at La Cage, Dudley played Zaza, sort of the lead, which is so amazing. And he had his Cajel birds, our little birdies, and we all were sort of in one dressing room because we all had to move together pod. And so me and you and Mitch and I believe Graham were there every night, probably about 45 minutes before anyone else was, just so we could get in our zone.
Sitting. Well, when a bunch of them came in, the music got turned up, and they were singing parts from, music from other shows. And I'm like, oh, what the fuck? I can't listen to it's a cabaret when I'm getting ready to do, I am what I am, And it was, so we got there early and were able to kind of, like you said, get into our zone and kind of calm down and get... I got some of the basic padding done.
Right.
Things like that before everybody else had to watch that, which is not very pretty, so.
I think as I said, I really got to know Mitch mostly. Mitch and I are good friends because I helped him tuck. So.
Right.
So that was fun.
And I got to know Graham very well, not because I had to help him tuck, but because he was my right hand on stage and helped me through so much in that show. I don't think I could have done it without him. It's a big show for Zaza.
Yeah. And I think we did a pretty great job.
I think we did a great job.
I loved it. That show was one of those other moments in my life that just sort of changed my trajectory.
It was a bucket list role for me. So it was great.
That was really fun. So before La Cage, you have obviously been in the city for a while performing. Do you remember what your first show in Kansas City was?
Yes, it was Oliver at Shawnee Mission Theater in the Park. I had gone to KU and was graduating, had moved to Kansas City, and Steve Makovsky, who directed it, asked me to choreograph it. I used to dance a lot more than I do now. Getting too old to do that stuff anymore.
I watch you every night. And you can still shake a leg.
Well, I can still do a little bit, but not like I used to be able to. But I choreographed Oliver at Shawnee Mission Theater in the Park. And that was my first Kansas City show, I think so.
Did you grow up in Kansas City?
No, I grew up in a teeny tiny little town called Eskridge, Kansas. About 100 miles from here, southwest of Topeka.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Itty bitty little place, about 600 people.
Wow. What brought you to Kansas City from there?
KU. Cool. I went to KU. My dad told me that I could go to Emporia and live at home, and I said, oh, okay. So I went to KU. Because it was just far enough away from home that I could not drive back and forth. So I went to KU and then moved to Kansas City because that's what one did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's pretty much so.
You just moved to Kansas City because you wanted to get a job. Mm-hmm. My degrees were in education, so I got a teaching job. Mm-hmm. And taught English and speech and debate and mm-hmm. eventually moved into theater. I mean, theater was what I always wanted to do, but you know how many theater teaching jobs there are compared to mm-hmm. English yes. jobs and mm-hmm. things like that. Mm-hmm. So I did that for a while. Helped with the theater department at Ruskin High School.
Mm-hmm. So crazy.
Yeah. And then quit teaching. And
what year was that? Do you remember?
Really? Are you asking this woman her age?
I mean,
come
on. Well,
because that was 1980, for God's sakes.
I know. So, and that's when you stopped teaching there?
No, that's when I started teaching.
You started uh-huh. teaching there. Right. Like, you just missed my mom. Like, that would have been so crazy. My mom and my dad went to Ruskin High School.
You know what? You know, Corey, we need to change the topic right now because I'm really... I could have had your mother and father as students. Is that what you're telling me? Okay, good. No, I'm just kidding.
No.
Yeah. No, yeah. So I did that for a while and... did a lot of theater. Shawnee Mission Theater in the Park, Olathe, mm-hmm. did a couple shows at the Unicorn, did Penn Valley Park used to be.
Yeah, big. I loved Penn Valley Park.
Was that my first round of theater?
I think so,
it
too.
It was called Theater Under the Stars, and it was at Penn Valley Park, and Dick Pond was a big director at mm-hmm. Theater in the Park, Penn Valley Park. Mm-hmm. And I was doing Seven Brides for Seven Brothers and had bright red hair when I met my husband.
I had my first, theater crush after seeing Grease there when I was in, seventh grade.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes, this is the best thing in the whole wide world. He was so dreamy.
I had several crushes on those, too. Yeah, mm-hmm. those dreamy boys.
Richard C. Pond is the reason I'm in theater.
Is he really?
Yes. I mean, he gave me my first acting job when I was, 13 years old. So,
I did several shows with him.
Him and Colleen Tom are the reason why I stand before
Colleen
you
Tom,
in this manifestation of insanity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, that's so crazy. So you said that's where you met your husband. How did you meet your husband?
Well, we met in a bar.
Right.
It just happened to be while I was doing Seven Brides for Seven Brothers and good old Richard C. Pond had decided that all seven of us needed to dye our hair red. So we would look like brothers, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. I had whitish blonde hair, and some of the guys had dark black hair, and we all dyed our hair red, and some of us turned carrot red and carrot orangey red.
And some of you didn't change
it
all.
And probably didn't change at all, but we looked like brothers, so to speak. And so I had bright red hair when I met John at the old cabaret in Maine at 51st and Maine, through a theater friend. You know,
the world.
From KU. Mm-hmm. The world is through theater.
That's right.
Everything we do is through theater, right?
Yeah.
And an old friend of mine from KU, a bunch of graduate students had come in to Kansas City to have fun. And one of my other... This is going to get confusing. One of the other graduate school friends there brought John, not as a date, but brought John because they were working together. John was the executive director of Young Audiences, and they mm-hmm. were doing the big festival shows in Crown Center at the time. Mm-hmm. And Randy was designing sets for him.
Mm-hmm.
So he brought John just to have fun and blah, blah, and we met.
Mm-hmm.
And our Puerto Rican yenta said to us at the end of the night, I think you should go home together.
Yeah.
mm-hmm. Pepe Echegaray. Yes.
Thank you.
I still remember it. Thank you, Pepe.
Yeah.
And I quickly told Pepe that I had this under control, and mm-hmm. we were together ever since.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's, how many years were you all together?
35.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Almost 35. Yeah,
yeah, almost 35. Uh-huh. And how long until you got as married as you could be?
Well, we met in 1983, and we had a commitment ceremony in 1987.
Awesome.
was not legal, was not mm-hmm. a marriage. Mm-hmm. And we had that in 1987, right after we adopted our son, who mm-hmm. was 15 at the time we adopted him. And then we got legally married in 2014.
Yeah, yeah. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. We had to go to Iowa to do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're even the cusp before it was nationally legal.
Yeah.
You had to go to a different state and sort of...
Right. Well, we did. We had to go to... John developed Alzheimer's later in his life, and so I was... we were trying to wait until it was legal in Kansas, sure. which is where we live, mm-hmm. Lived at the time. And he was getting to the point where selfishly wanted him to be able to remember
sure. mm-hmm.
that this was happening and all of those kinds of things. So I just decided we couldn't wait any longer, and we
mm-hmm. went to Iowa.
Took two bus loads of us to Iowa.
Yeah. I know actually quite a few people that did. What Chris Barksdale did too,
yep.
right?
Yeah.
A lot of people have gone to Iowa. Well, or to Iowa. I have several friends that went to California to do mm-hmm. it,
yeah.
or to...
I had some in New York because yeah. New York was, mm-hmm. Was mm-hmm. able to.
Some of the states that were yeah. that were before Kansas and Missouri.
Matt and I talk a lot about how, you know, because we were together for a while before we got married, probably yeah. five,
Eight
if
years,
not
right?
6 years.
Yeah.
To that point. And so we always sort of talked about that we wish we could have gotten married earlier because, you know, we kind of knew that we were going to probably be with each other.
Right.
But, like, we didn't want to live in a state where it wasn't legal.
Exactly.
So, and we had, you know, the ability to be youthful and sort of wait. And honestly, when I met Matt, we had talked about that we would probably never see that day.
Exactly.
Where it's just universal.
Oh, John and I never thought we would ever see it.
Yeah.
We didn't ever think we would.
Yeah. So you said that you adopted your son. Mm-hmm. What was the process of doing that? Sort of in that time, you know, where all of those sorts of... Because I actually know this story, but I love how he shares it because it is a pretty special story.
Well, thank you. Back to theater.
Yeah.
I was directing, again, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers at Shawnee Mission Theater in the Park this time.
It seems like that show changes your life.
That show changed my life in two major ways. And Robert, who later became our son, auditioned. And I cast him. He was a young high school kid, I mean, 15. Mm-hmm. One of the ensemble kind of dancer singer guys, you mm-hmm. know. It was weird because as we got through the show, we would start having cast parties or start going out afterwards, mm-hmm. and there was Robert hanging out all the time with the adults in the mm-hmm. crowd. And Robert always looked at 15, looked 21.
Yeah,
he always looked older than he was. and I kept saying, as trying to be careful because as we have to be with you know kids around,
sure.
where I'm like. Okay, we're having cast parties that alcohol's being served at, mm-hmm. that we're all just kind of
right. well,
sometimes
a safe
little more,
space. Yeah.
and we're
yeah.
a safe, but we're a safe space, and
yeah.
he was hanging out, and it was like, who is this kid that's, you know,
right.
hanging out with us? And so I started kind of trying to get to know him just a little bit better, and saying, yeah, maybe you really shouldn't be here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's time for your
right.
parents to pick you up, you know, or
right.
whoever.
The adults are starting to become
yeah,
more adult.
The adults are becoming more adult and the kids have gone. Because we had kids that were 10 years old in the cast,
yeah.
and, you know, and parents would hang out for a while and then everybody left and then we
mm-hmm.
would continue on. Quickly found out that his parents had were both deceased, that he was living with an aunt and uncle. And there's no other way to say this. They just didn't give a damn.
Mm-hmm.
They cared that they got the support checks, and they cared that he made good grades in school.
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, they really did not care. And so I kind of started keeping my eye on him a little bit more. As you get to know me, you kind of know that I'm
a mother hen.
Kind of the mama bear,
mm-hmm.
kind of the mother hen. I kind of care about people and want to make sure that everybody's okay. So I kind of started doing that, and we got a little bit closer, and he was in need of money, so John and I would hire him to do lawn work. You know, come cut those bushes out of my backyard, and, you know, we'll give you $20.
Yep.
You know, because back then, that was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And he was great to do that, and we would do that. And the summer progressed, and right after school started, I got a phone call one morning at about 7:15, and it was a friend of his that told me that they had picked him up for school that morning, known something was wrong, and instead of going to school, went right to the hospital, and he had taken two bottles of Motrin,
mm-hmm.
and we took him out of the hospital 8 weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
I was there at 7:45 in the morning or something at the hospital. His aunt never came to the hospital. His uncle showed up at noon and said, we don't want him back, because at that point, he also had come out and told them that, I mean, it was pretty obvious to anybody with eyes
sure.
and any kind of sense. But the point is his aunt and uncle weren't cluing in, and they basically told him, we don't have people like that in our family, and so what do we do?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it was not legal for two gay men to adopt
sure.
a child at all, let alone an adult adolescent, right, yeah. an adolescent gay boy. And he was at the Shawnee Mission Medical Center, which is owned by the Seventh-day Adventists, which was another issue. So we finally hired a lawyer. Me being the mama bear said, we've got to do whatever we can do. John being the practical administrator said, this is not legal. There's no way we're going to be able to do this. So why are we even considering it? You know, but went with me to the meeting and we hired a lawyer and got a really good social worker at the hospital who said she couldn't necessarily move this forward, but she wasn't going to stand in the way.
Right.
And she would get the hospital to not stand in the way. So, like I said, it wasn't legal. So what ended up happening was John adopted Robert. Mm-hmm. He was, John was 13 years older than I am. So he was a little older. And I mean, I was 29 at the point I could have done it, but you know, he was older than I. So he adopted Robert, but the judge created paperwork that gave me parental rights. So I could put him in the hospital if needed, which he was a couple times. You know, I could enroll him in school. I could pick him up from school. I could, you know, do whatever. So that's what we did.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was great.
You sort of have mentioned about how, you know, in hindsight, it wasn't like a ton of obstacles, actually. It was almost like people were almost glad that someone was taking care of this kid in some way.
There was a lot of that. There was also an awful lot of... It ended quickly, but there was an awful lot of, you're doing what? Mm-hmm. Oh my, what? Really? I mean, even, you know, and I can say this, John's brother, who I loved from the day I met him. I mean, he was a wonderful man, said, what in the world are you doing?
Sure.
I mean, because the people's minds go places that sometimes are just disgusting, and and some people's minds went to a disgusting place.
Yeah, that you guys were almost
buying this kid to, you know, to do whatever with, and that was not the case at all. And it was quite the journey. But that kind of stuff ended very, very, very quickly. I mean, we had many friends that were like, "What are you doing? I don't, I don't."
Well, even if you don't go to that place, it's like you're going to take the fucked up teenager.
As exactly.
So, like, it would be one thing if you were like, we want a baby, we want, you know.
Exactly.
But, but to just, like, on whim, kind of. I mean, if you're talking about
But that was also the mother hen in Dudley as he.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I hear that said. For sure. Yeah. For
well, he was kind of, you know, he was kind of out there when we adopted him. He was a punk, rocker kind of guy. He had three colors of hair when we adopted him at once. I mean, all three colors in his hair. You know, had only clothes that were 14 sizes too big, and you know that was the deal, and you know, and it was that quickly changed. Not completely, but it quickly changed, and we ended up enrolling him in Catholic school for his junior and senior year in high school. I mean, one of the things he really needed was structure, and he had not had structure in his life. And he'd had to grow up too quickly, but he needed structure, and we were able to provide that.
How many years did you have him in your life?
We had him in our life until 2011, when he died from complications from AIDS.
Did he live still in Kansas City?
He lived in Kansas City for a while, and then he did what all kids, I mean, not all guys, I guess, but what a lot of people do. He lived on the East Coast for a while in Washington, D.C., and then he came back to Kansas City, met his husband, or the man who became his husband, here in Kansas City, and then they lived in California for a long time. But then, as Robert got sicker, they moved back to Kansas City, so he was here the last... almost 5 or 6 years of his life.
Yeah.
So
I think maybe we had mentioned, and I might have this wrong, that maybe he was friends with like Colleen Thompson's son, like Victor Valentine, maybe, and all of that. And so there's been kind of like this, whenever I met you and we sort of talked about that, there was like this almost connection with me that because Colleen always sort of talked about how I reminded her of her son in different ways. And so I was like, I kind of got to know someone through you in a weird kind of way.
Exactly.
It was kind of special. So you also work for the Heartland Men's Chorus.
I do.
How long have you been with them?
Well, altogether, a long time, but... you're just calling up all these things that bring up the fact that I'm old, Corey. I'm just kidding.
But you look gorgeous.
Well, thank you, darling. I work on it. No, I'm just kidding. I've been with the chorus for years and years and years and years and years. I was president of their board when they turned 10.
Wow.
and we're in our 34th season. Mm-hmm. I have just started back as the development director for the Harlem Men's Chorus in April of last mm-hmm. year.
Yeah.
So, but I've sung off and on with them. Sometimes I'm not singing the holiday concert because I'm in Victor Victoria.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can't do both. So, I probably will sing in the spring with them, but mm-hmm. I also work with them. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a new artistic director with them, Sean.
Sean Colon is yeah. the interim artistic interim. Director, yeah. to be official. we're in that year of Destin Cates left right. at the mm-hmm. end of last season.
Yes.
He has gone on to Temple University. Sean is our interim and will take this year. They're in the process of having applications mm-hmm. and the interview process and doing all mm-hmm. that to hire yeah. a new artistic director.
It's crazy.
Crazy world.
Yeah, it's amazing how like big and then small the world gets, because like Courtney's husband Alex is the one who does the lights for it. So it's crazy.
It's just so small. I mean, this theater world is just incredible to me. It's yep. just like it really truly is.
Yes.
But it's yep. also wonderful.
Yes.
What a great family.
I agree. It's a very strange way that we're all, you know, whatever the 6 degrees of separation of, you know, Kevin Bacon is within the Kansas City community. I don't know who that person would be.
Well, I don't know.
We'll have to figure out who our Kevin Bacon is.
For each of us.
Yeah. It might be you right now, though. Oh. There's so many people who sort of wagon wheel off of you in different worlds.
Well, when you've been around for a while and when you've done as many different things as I have, you know... Mm-hmm. You just meet all kinds of people all over the place, and mm-hmm. and then it's amazing how you reconnect with them sometimes. I mean, I will walk into a rehearsal, the first rehearsal for a show sometimes, and it's like, oh my God, you know, I've known that person forever.
Yeah.
And whether I've ever done, I mean, I've known Jeanette Bonjour forever. We've never done a show together.
And here you are.
Never done, and here we are. But I mean, we've never done one, but we've known each other forever.
Right.
You know, or it seems like we have anyway, you know.
But Jeanette sort of took some time off of her theater world and then came back, I think, in 13 or 14. I cast her as Mama Noah in Children of Eden.
Yeah.
And that was kind of her first comeback to the stage in probably 8 years or so.
Yeah. Well, I took about 11 years off, so...
Was LaCage what brought you back mm-hmm. to that? Yeah.
Yeah. LaCage brought me back. We moved to New York in 1996, and were there for 4.5 years or so. Mm-hmm. I say we came back in 2000. It was kind of late 2000, but that's okay. And, you know, you have to make a living, and you had to... Life got in the way.
Yeah.
I had a kid and I had a husband. You know?
You couldn't always be doing Joan Rivers' Daughter's
no,
Wedding.
No, I could not always be doing Joan Rivers' Daughter's Wedding. Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a cool story that uh-huh. you can share sometime if you'd like. Yeah. I believe you have maybe glassware from
the reception. I do have glassware from the reception of Melissa Rivers' Wedding.
I was like,
yeah.
You can call her Melissa. I think everybody knows.
Right.
I was like, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, that was cool. I attended a dinner party at Dudley's house last year that... Maybe could have tried to kill a small army with the amount of wine that we drank.
Well, that could be true. That could be true. My neighbor commented on the recycling bin, but that's okay. No, I'm just kidding.
But I thought that was really kind of cool. That was me and you and Kip and Matt, and we uh-huh. all just sort of sat around and
ate and drank.
And ate and drank, and really, for the first time, I think probably I got to hang out with you.
I think
you.
That's probably true.
Outside of rehearsals or show
things, yes, that's probably true.
So I fell in love with your fireplace, and I think that I was like, I want to live... I changed my mind about how I want to have now a fireplace in whatever home I own.
I just posted a picture. I had my first fire the other night, probably Friday or Saturday, whatever night. We didn't have rehearsal, and I had my first fire because I have a wood burning fireplace in my apartment, and it's just fabulous. And
yeah.
I keep thinking about moving back toward Midtown, and I can't find any place that has a fireplace.
And wood burning makes a difference.
Yeah.
We have a house that like has this big old gorgeous fireplace, and the like chimney sweep came in, and then the people gave us the like quote to bring it back to wood burning, and we were like, well, I just don't want to pay, you know, what it was like $6,000 or something. And I was like, but how much is it for gas? And they were like, well, it's only like two for gas. And I was like, okay, that's fine. And then I burn it, and I'm just like, this is fucking not worth it.
Yeah. Well, I have a gas.
Like, picture.
Yeah.
Of a fire.
Yeah. I have a gas lighter that I use to, mm-hmm. it makes it very easy to light the wood, mm-hmm. to light the fire. But
sure.
But I really like the wood burning.
Yeah, really it makes all the difference better. In the world. Yeah. We it never does. Light the fire. Like, we do it for, like, a picture of, like, oh, the Christmas decorations are up. I can put the kids in front of the fireplace. That won't burn them because it's worthless, this fire.
Yeah. And, it's just a
and then we turn it off. It's not even that, though, because when you get the flu open, it's just cold.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
stupid.
Exactly.
It's
yeah.
Stupid.
It's stupid.
I'm like, I should have just waited. And
well, we have.
Saved
when
money.
I, yeah, if I'm home and it's 45, that's kind of my.
That's
limit,
your cutoff.
My
yeah.
kind of cutoff. It has to be getting to 45 degrees or below. Mm-hmm. But if I'm home and it's 45 or below, I have a fire in the fireplace.
Yeah, I think that's
just...
fair. Yep.
Well, I'll make sure to watch the weather. And whenever
you
it's
bet.
45, I'll be like,
well, when
it does.
When I posted the picture the other day, I had about 40 people. You know, I'm on my way.
Yeah. You're like, okay.
With a picture of a cocktail, usually attached.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do love a good cocktail.
Well, a good
you.
Cocktail
yeah.
is a lovely thing to have. A lovely thing to have. That's one of the reasons I hate theater. That's
right.
One of the few reasons I hate theater.
Because
I don't drink before I come to rehearsals. And it's
yeah.
like, oh!
That's
want,
good.
It is good.
That's good.
It's real good, but I want my 5 o'clock cocktail.
Yep. Yeah. That's fair.
You know?
I've had the fortunate ability to be in a show with you, Lacage, and then I was able to direct you in our Chorus Line retrospect concert, which was... like almost 4 years ago now, which
uh-huh.
is even crazier for that. And that was...
Only four? I was thinking it was longer.
It was right before Matt and I got married.
What interesting.
No, it hasn't been much longer than that, yeah.
Yeah. So it was that January and we got married in February.
I guess that's true.
That was our midlife players extravaganza. Whenever we literally only rehearsed twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
And we put up a show, sort of script in hand, but I challenged everyone to get those scripts... out of
mm-hmm,
their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a fun kind of process. We were talking about it in the lobby the other night at Victor Victoria, which we'll talk about in a second. And I don't know if whenever we started that process, I really realized what that story was going to feel like at the end of it. Really thinking about, and now thinking about the first time I auditioned for a show compared to now when I'm auditioning for a show and what it's like to still stand on that line sometimes and how nerve-wracking it is no matter how many years and talents and confidence that you have. So that was what was really cool about that is you were almost able to hear the story of a Chorus Line through people who were coming back to the line in a way. And
that's beautiful.
I loved your monologue. You know,
well, thank you.
It takes balls to stand out there for real by yourself and have to emote like that. And you were probably the first person I wanted in that show. I was like, Dudley has to be my Paul, or I don't know if I can do it.
Thank you.
And I remember the first rehearsal, everyone sort of walking in and being like, what the fuck did we get ourselves
into? Well, that's true, because, well, and I've never done a midlife, I almost said a midlife crisis show. I've done several of those. I don't, sorry.
You might be in one of those.
I might be in one of those on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I've never done a show with midlife players, and it kind of makes me laugh that you have to be 35
and,
is midlife. Okay, fine. Because I was way over 35 before I did one. But you and Kip asked me to do the show, and I was like, Chorus Line? What was
sure.
I? 58 years old, or whatever, 57 years old. And I was like, oh my goodness. And I was like, I can't dance. I mean, like that anymore. I used to be able, I did Chorus Line once, you know, when I was young, but I can't do that. And then it was like, no, we're not going to do that. Or this is what it's going to be. And it was explained to me. And but still the first rehearsal was like,
what are we doing?
What? Mm-hmm. We're doing what? Mm-hmm. And then I got the script and I realized that Paul's monologue was 3 pages long. And I said, what the fuck did I say yes to this for?
Mm-hmm. But I keep working on it. You only have 9 full rehearsals.
Nine rehearsals until you got like, you have to do
over
this.
Over 4 months.
To remember it.
Over the holidays.
Yes, and over Christmas. So Christmas night, I was sitting on my sofa going,
better hope for the weather.
Yes, exactly. But it ended up being something that I'm very, very proud of.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of.
I just think it was really cool... all of you, because we had an all-star cast of that, of
new
people, and then people who had never really done a show before.
Yeah.
I
still am very good
cool.
and very close to a couple people that I met in that cast.
Like, that's when I got to know Francie.
Exactly, me too.
Yeah.
That's exactly one of the people I was thinking about, because she stood next to me in the line.
Yeah.
And I had no idea who Francie was before we did the show. No idea. And... trying to remember who was on the other side. What was his name? It was on the other side of me. Doesn't matter. I was And all of a sudden at one rehearsal, I'm like kind of, we're standing in front of music stands, you know, so I turned kind of to my right to talk to him. Mm-hmm. I don't know what about. I mean, as characters, we were just, mm-hmm. you know, lines. And she kind of punched me. Like, what are you doing? And I'm like, hi. When did you get here? And I turned the other direction, and it was like, there she was. And so we started, you know, going back and forth. Mm-hmm. And she and I are very good friends. I mean, yeah. we're very close, and I love them to death. And we really hit, I mean, you just connect with people in ways that you don't even know.
And that show is so interesting.
Oh my God.
To your point, because I have been in that show, and you really get to know the person standing to the left and the right.
You have to, yeah.
Absolutely.
And there are like 11 people down the line that you never interact with.
Never talk with.
Like Brian Atkins, who I think was Don on the complete opposite side of you, like, you guys never interacted. You never stood by each other. Yeah. You never talked to each other. Like, so that's why that show is also, from an audience member standpoint, of realizing just how close connections can form if you were to just move one person down the line.
Oh, yeah.
Because you now know, like, Sarah and Craig or whatever.
And ways. That's where I got to know them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Sarah and Craig are in their own world right now. So, gosh.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's weird.
It is. And that is where I got to meet Sarah and Craig. I mean, I knew who they were and we met before, but that's where I got to know them.
Yeah, you're crazy. And during that time, your husband was really kind of, you know, ill at that point.
He was, I'm trying to think of the year, but he was probably already gone from home in the
care. Yeah, he was. And that was a conversation that we had sometimes about what that was like. To sort of be living on your own again, but then
for the first time ever.
And while we're navigating the show, and I think that you and I a few times had the ability to sort of bond over, like, because I was in kind of a brand new relationship, and
right?
You were
well,
on
we
the
did
backside of
exactly
that.
Well, we did, because I remember a couple times when we came together that rehearsals, and I had just come from visiting him or doing something, mm-hmm. you know, with him for him or whatever, and. It was always one of those things that took me a while to get out of, because just emotionally, just mm-hmm. you know, because I never knew what I was going to find when I got there, because I never knew what state he was going to be in at that point. But somehow it's weird how things work, because I could sometimes take the fact that I was really sort of depressed. You know, about my personal situation at the moment and about his health and things like that, and turn that into Paul, which was, I don't know if it was sort of depressing.
Yeah, sure.
Intense, you know.
Vulnerable.
Very vulnerable. Yeah. Very vulnerable and very retrospective and how he was, I mean, I kind of looked at it like I was looking back at when I was that age.
Yeah.
There's some of that was, I kind of look at Chorus Line a whole lot differently, because I don't know how 19-year-olds could do.
No. Well, I mean, it sounds different coming from a 19-year-old.
So different coming, yes, exactly.
Like, that's why
it
that
was
show
like,
was
holy
so cool.
moly. It was just like, wow, this is, well, it's a testament to how well it's written and how wonderful it is.
But I remember talking to a girl, her name was Lisa Hickok or whatever, she was playing Val, which was her song in the show is Dance 10 Looks 3 or Tits and Ass, mm-hmm. and she's talking about what that's like, because she's always been a dancer with the ballet, mm-hmm. and how when she was younger, like, she had to have that ballet body, and she had to have, you know, the beautiful breasts or whatever, mm-hmm. and what that's like to be standing on the line at her age, being like, my breasts are not as perky and my ass is not the same.
As perky either.
As perky. But what that was like to have to, like, stand like you did have
mm-hmm.
a perky chest again and all. Mm-hmm. And so it was, she and I had, I just was able, because that show is so individual, you have to have one-on-one moments with everyone. Mm-hmm. I got to know every single person in a really, like, special way.
Which is really special. It's really cool. To do that through, yeah.
Yeah, it really so is. That brings us to your first show here at the Asylum was right after the Barn moved here, and that was Chicago. Mm-hmm. And you played yes. Amos Hart.
I did.
That.
Played Amos Hart.
Yep. You were very sweet, heartbreaking.
Thank you.
As always, you know.
I don't know.
I'm always heartbreaking. Thanks for having me. You know.
I need to break some hearts because I'm single again, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm just kidding.
Do you have any love interests?
Do I have interest?
I got plenty of interest.
I don't know that anybody's interested in me, but that's okay. Yeah.
That's not real. And so now we are about 1 week away. When this airs, because this will air on Thursday, we will be mm-hmm. 1 week away from opening yeah. Victor Victoria.
Okay.
Where you are playing Toddy.
I am.
Yeah. What, Victor Victoria is a show, a movie and a musical that I've known for years. And so whenever I heard that The Barn was doing it, I was so excited because no one does Victor Victoria.
Well, I think they're advertising it as a premiere. I mean, it's a Kansas City regional yeah. premiere or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know how far out it goes, but premiere. I was very excited about Victor Victoria because I had seen the movie. I had never seen the musical
mm-hmm.
until I got cast and rented or did whatever, streamed the movie mm-hmm. and or the Broadway production.
Mm-hmm.
They're very different.
They are?
Very different. I'm so disappointed that that song is not in this show. And now I can't remember the name of it. What is it? The Spanish.
Yeah, but you get at least get to sing Paris by Night.
Though. Oh, yes, I do get to sing Paris by Night. So yeah. I hope I get, yeah, I hope you think I get to sing it. No, it's a lovely piece. I loved it. When I first started singing Paris by Night, I hated it. Because there's about 42 different key changes and all these
and
accidentals.
That's how the show starts.
And it's the very first thing that happens in the show. I simply walk out on stage and start singing a song.
Right.
There's
nothing.
No introduction. There's nothing. It literally segues right from the overture.
Mm-hmm.
And, which is fine. I mean, it's fine, but, it's just a little bit different than mm-hmm. most musicals, different than what we usually see. Cause we mm-hmm. usually get a little bit of an explanation.
Right.
And Paris by Night is the explanation about what the show's kind of about.
It is.
About Paris at night and all of the secrets that it shares. Mm-hmm. And so it's,
And it is the gayest musical I've ever scene.
It really,
like,
truly
I mean,
is a
people
gay
are
musical.
Like, Lakash is so gay. I'm like, have you seen Victor?
Exactly.
This show
it really is
gay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that it was written when it was and talks yeah. about the things that it talks about, I just hope people come see it just for, like, kind of the story and to take into consideration when it was written.
Well, exactly. Well, we have to remember that gay people aren't We weren't invented in 1986.
No,
I mean, come on, or whatever year. You know, and we do have to remember that this has gone back a.
Well, Lakash is old too, isn't
eternity.
It?
Lakash is.
Yeah,
Lakash opened in 83 or 84 on Broadway or something, and
the movie in like French is even
older.
Yeah, right.
It's way older, and I mean Paris in the 30s. Well, I mean, if you look at Kansas City history and dig in, mm-hmm. Kansas City had a great gay history
they
in
did.
The 20s and 30s, and mm-hmm. you know. I mean, I don't know how great... It was a great gay history. Sometimes we weren't treated
right.
very
sure.
greatly, but...
And we sort of talk about that... you know, we've had to talk about that in a few different ways of different projects of sort of saying, well, like, the ability for gay men to sort of be who they are today is like... The Art Sound is producing The Boys in the Band. And that will be next June, and so really
very
sort of
excited about that.
Yeah, me too. Oh, I'll be using you for some gay history for sure in the aspect of that. But really just sort of talking about when we approached that piece and when Darren Sextro and I were discussing the script and saying like how different gay men's lives were in the 70s, 80s. You know, we now have gay marriage. We
right.
now literally, to this day, have a gay man running for president.
Yes.
Like, how different life
yes.
is. And so you almost have to, like, smack yourself to realize that even 5 years ago,
right.
I couldn't get married
yes.
here. And that's now right. here we are, like, just how quickly sometimes things can come, and then yet... You have a president who is trying to...
But we can't take for granted
all.
That he's overturned 90-some laws already,
right.
yeah.
you know, in his
so
presidency.
It's
that
this
are, yeah.
weird ebb and flow of trying to remember your past by, and also, like, fighting for who you are now, because we're supposed to be out and proud, but
yeah.
back then, like, you could get killed.
Yeah.
Right.
You could still get killed, but
well,
you could really get killed.
Yeah.
Well, and we worried about that when we adopted Robert, because we got some publicity for that. we weren't looking for that, but yeah. That's what we got. Mm-hmm. And then started going places as a family, mm-hmm. you know, and it was scary sometimes. I mean, mm-hmm. and you know, and I told somebody not long ago, in a different setting, that I'm a little bit scared now. I mean, I've never been really scared. I've always been who I am. And
someone should write a song about that.
I should write a song about that. I think it's already been done. but I've always been, you know, this is who I am. And if you, I mean, it sounds crass, but if you don't like it, that's your problem, not mm-hmm. mine.
Yeah.
I want you to like me. I want to like you, mm-hmm. but
right.
if but we can't, if, that's yeah. the way it works.
If that's the issue, if that's what tips the scale, then I'm sorry.
Yeah, because I'm not changing. And that's always been the way I've lived my life. But, you know, in the last several years, like you said, we've got a president now. And it's not just him. It's an entire administration and, mm-hmm. you know, everybody else. I think he could do something about it if he wanted to. But point, uh-huh. I'm sorry, you may want to edit that out. I'm just kidding. I just think that they're taking a lot of steps backwards. And we've seen the ramifications of that.
Yeah.
I mean, and not just in Kansas City, but it is in Kansas City too. And it makes you think twice before you go out.
Yeah, I don't know if it makes everybody scared or just more aware.
More aware.
The word I was going to say is cautious. Like, yeah. But I kind of feel cautious in so many different ways. But yeah, I mean, Matt and I right now are looking for homes. And one of the deciding factors that we talked about in neighborhood is I was like, I don't think I could put my rainbow flag out here at all.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And why do I, where I then have an internal conflict of, do I respect that and like the area that it is, or should I move into that mm-hmm. and put my rainbow flag there? So maybe other people,
mm-hmm. right?
Like it's just, it's weird to sort of be a frontier person, you know, to say, oh, I don't care. I'll put my rainbow flag out. I'm proud of who I am, while also making sure that, you know, someone's not going to throw a brick through my window or, mm-hmm. you know, exactly. shoot me when I walk out of the house exactly. just yeah. because of a rainbow flag. So
mm-hmm.
it is, and we did sort of with Obama get a safety net around mm-hmm. us that things were maybe yep. going to mm-hmm. be mm-hmm. okay.
Yeah.
And then we retracted
yeah.
over these last
years. We have, and one of the things that the younger kids, I call them the younger kids, sorry, because mm-hmm. I'm old, need to remember and learn. I think part of what we need to educate people is that it has not always been this way.
Yeah.
And that, you know, there were a bunch of us out there, and I'm not just saying me, because before me,
yeah,
obviously.
We all have forefathers. Obviously,
we all have yes. forefathers. And, but we fought like hell.
Yeah.
I mean, we fought. You know, to get where we are. And I'm proud of that. I mean, yeah. you know, that's something I'm very proud of. And,
well, right, for you and your husband well, to have been out and to adopt a kid
yeah.
in the years that you did, like, yeah. that's a frontier.
Well, and see, the thing about it is when you're in the midst of it, you right, don't even know, life. You don't necessarily know that
right.
it's a frontier. We didn't do it because it was a frontier. I get what you're saying completely,
yeah.
and I thank you for it, but that's not what we did it for.
Right. Well, there are other people who are more scared to have even let alone
True.
Be out
True.
And to,
True.
To be that vulnerable
yeah.
for. And you just you are another thing.
I am.
You know.
I am
to that. So yeah. So we open Victor Victoria mm-hmm. on November 14th, and we run through I believe the 24th.
Yes.
And those are performances on Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 7:30 each week, mm-hmm. and then the Sundays are 2:00 matinees here
right.
at the Arts Asylum.
That's
and you
right.
can get tickets by going to the barnplayers.org, and they will have tickets for you
they
for
do.
Victor Victoria. They we're do. Pretty we're
come
pretty
see
excited.
It. It's gonna be fun.
It is.
It's gonna be very fun.
I have been, because we just got off Jesus Christ Superstar, and then I went on a vacation. I've just sort of joined the cast here within the last, like, week and a half.
And we're so excited that you're there. we're very excited.
It's yeah. kind of fun to be this little flicker of light that runs through the show, because that's the role. Like,
right.
I just show up every once in a while and say, hey,
hey.
Encourageable. And then
hey, encourageable. You're encourageable.
Yeah, I move on with my life. But it's kind of, but that room and that show has gone through a lot of ups and downs just through life. And it's the one thing that's pretty cool is even through all of the crazy stuff that's happening in and around us, that room is pretty awesome. The show, we all are kicking ass, and we're going to have a show for them in a week.
We are. Yeah. We're going to have a very good show for them in a week. We've had several ups and downs through the process of rehearsals.
We had one yesterday. Yeah. It just keeps coming.
It just keeps coming, and,
But I think
lots of things going on, and it's just,
it's making us stronger, we are a united front in telling this story, mm-hmm. and I am so excited almost that the 16 or 17 are getting to tell Victor Victoria, because as I said, I've never seen it.
Right.
Like, that's the thing I'm selling to most people. It's mm-hmm. just come because
you've never seen this show.
I've never seen it. Like,
there's some great music in it, and there's some great dialogue, and the basic storyline is fun and kind of, lighthearted in a way.
It is.
But it also digs at more of the real life of these people.
Well, it talks about love,
and
what it's like to just love openly, regardless.
Regardless of who it is. Yeah. And we need so much of that in our life.
The
right
basic
now.
Plotline, which you get in the first few seconds, so we're not ruining anything, is there is a female performer who adorns and pretends to be a man. And goes through playing a woman, going through the circuit,
and falling in love.
Yeah,
and her sidekicks fall in love, and
it's
all about we're all meant to cherish one another,
mm-hmm.
Which is one of the lyrics,
mm-hmm.
And like I said, we need so much of that these days, and it's a fun story and a fun way to get there. Lots of ups and downs in the show.
There's a farce in Act Two.
Lots mm-hmm. of farce, yeah. Lots of cat and mouse type stuff.
Yeah.
Lots of hiding from each other, and then, for lack of a better phrase, coming out to each other.
Yeah. There's a lot of coming out.
There's just a lot of coming out. There's a lot of gayness. There's a lot of honesty.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fun.
And you
lots
have a great sidekick, too. Erica Baruth as Victoria.
Erica is going to just blow your socks off.
Yeah.
She is divine. she's a great... She was well cast in this role.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody is. Brian Larios as King Marchand, Christoph Cording as Squash.
Yeah.
I get to touch him.
And your Norma.
Oh, my God.
She's incredible.
Oh, yes.
Come and see. I mean, the ensemble...
Brenna is phenomenal.
The ensemble has to go in and out of a lot of worlds inside of this show, but the four or five principal characters are really stellar.
Yeah.
Like, they have a lot of a story to tell.
Thank you.
And again, I just get to pop in and introduce people from time to time, and I have a cute little scene with Dudley that I love.
Yes.
Like, I just, by the end of it, that scene is just going to get bigger.
It's going to get bigger and bigger,
ridiculous.
Isn't it? It's going to get pretty ridiculous.
It's going to get ridiculous.
I think I'll actually put a chair on my head. So.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
Call me Prancer. We get to now enter into the last session of the interview, which is really kind of fun.
Scary.
If you're just tuning in, we are speaking with Dudley, and this is Couch Chats. So, my first question is, what is your definition of real magic?
He went deep real quick.
Oh, my God.
I will be the deep.
You told
questions.
Me these were going to be easy
it's
questions.
True. This is minor, light, ridiculous. Corey's are deep and intense.
Okay. Of real magic.
Of real magic.
Real magic to me is two people connecting at a very real, deep level.
Human interaction.
Yeah.
I have a very similar...
Really...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When people fall in love, it's real magic to me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I define that sometimes too, where it doesn't necessarily have to be your boyfriend,
or
someone like that.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, my best friends are real magic.
Yeah.
To me, mm-hmm. that's what they are.
And often they can create magic just by existing with each other.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love that.
The ones that are really the real magic are the ones that you don't talk to for about 2-3 months, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, connected for some reason, and it's like because, you know, life gets in the way.
Yeah. Well, we talk about that all the time.
Yeah,
you know, where you're just like, I want to see you again.
I don't see you nearly as much as I want to.
Like, where the hell you been? But then these moments, like Victor Victoria, mm-hmm. or theater in general,
bring us back
together for
That's
a second.
Right.
Yep.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, now for the fluff.
Okay, good.
You're a new addition to the crayon box. What color are you and why?
Oh. I think I'm probably orange.
Mm-hmm. Why are you orange?
I don't know.
I love that.
I don't know. I think that I always have had a high energy and kind of, I don't know, bubbly personality probably is, I don't know.
Would you call me bubbly?
Would you call me bubbly?
Yeah.
Bubbly personality. And I think of orange as being kind of bright and cheerful and, but yet not too harsh.
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
mm-hmm,
kind of welcomes you in.
I love
it. I don't know.
Yes.
I dig that. Serious question. Hi, back to you. And I'm actually kind of interested to see your answer for this. So what is something that you were told you could never do or do well that you have accomplished or are in the process of accomplishing?
Well, there are probably actually several of them. I think one of the things that I was told goes back to the fact that I am a gay man, openly gay man. And when I was a kid and when I was growing up and going through college, most gay men lived a very different life than I have lived, because a great deal of them remained single, remained closeted at least to a certain extent. Maybe they went out with a few friends, but they couldn't come out at work. They could, or whatever their situation was. And that I would never have what was expected, what was then called that successful life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you would have a husband, you would have children. I never thought I would have children.
Mm-hmm.
But I did. I did. And I also was always told that you could not do the arts and make a living. And I say to you, fuck that.
I say to you,
because we
fuck
can.
That.
Yeah, because we can. We can do both of those things. So.
When did you come out to your family and your friends, or did you ever really have to?
Well, it was sort of interesting because, I mean, my friends, you know, college and after, everybody knew. I mean, I was just kind of out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I met John, and we actually moved in together pretty quickly after we met. And my parents came to see us once, and I played the role, the game that was my bedroom downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I
mm-hmm.
took my robe downstairs and threw it on the bed. You know, did all those things. And that was very nice. I know to this day that my mother knew exactly what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
My father probably ignored it for a while, because she said to me when she left, she gave me a hug and said something to the effect of, "What a wonderful home you and John have."
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, it's a pretty and mm-hmm. you know, pretty basic statement. But anyway, and then we decided we were going to adopt this child.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh, now we really kind of have to say it, don't we? So that's really when it was that I came out to my mother and father. I mean, and I, you know, and my siblings, I have four siblings, and they all went, well, duh. I mean, hello, we've known for years. I mean, and it was not a secret. I just had never
said it.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what I did.
I have been out since I was 13/14. But my husband now is the first person who I felt that I wanted the entire world to know that I was with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before then, I was very cautious on maybe who I was
mm-hmm.
introducing him
mm-hmm.
to. And not that I was, like, hiding my own sexuality, but the first time that I was like, no, I love another man
enough
that I don't care what any of you think.
Right.
Because I think this person and me are going to work out. And
right.
I just really remember consciously choosing to, like, correct people if they called us roommates or something.
Which is
like,
which is one of the things that gay marriage has done for us that I think some people, I don't know if they take advantage, whatever. John and I made a conscious choice when we first got together to always introduce each other as partners.
Mm-hmm.
And we were partners in life because
mm-hmm.
we couldn't say husband.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we could.
Right.
Could, but
mm-hmm.
it didn't mean anything.
Yeah.
You know, we could say spouse. We could do partner was kind of the word.
Yeah.
Well,
which is a generational thing that I don't have.
Right. Well, but even in my generation, I was laying in a dentist chair one day and they said, how come you're coming to me as a dentist? And I said, well, I'm John Kerry's partner. He worked in a healthcare center at the time. and we got benefits, yeah. You know? And he and I said, I'm John Kerry's partner. And they said, oh, what business are you in with John?
Right.
Yeah, and I was like...
You're like life.
And I said, no, I'm his life partner. And we always explained it. I mean, it was mm-hmm. just like we were never quiet about it. And if you didn't... I mean, we didn't shout it from the street corners, but we... That's how we always introduced ourselves. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I was extremely happy when I could start calling him my husband. Mm-hmm. And people knew what I meant.
I definitely feel that.
Yeah.
You know, that's mm-hmm. one of those things that in my memoir, I will definitely talk about what, you know, even if Matt and I don't last forever, because life happens in different ways, but I will say that he always sort of gave me that next kind of like punch to be like, fuck them.
Yes,
like,
exactly. Just
who the fuck cares what they have to think about you when you're talking about, like, your life and your love.
Well, like, see, my whole deal is if you don't like gay marriage, then don't do it.
Don't build one. Right.
Don't do it. Go.
And that's why I love how the legislation, that's maybe not the right word or whatever, but that is that they made same-sex marriage about that you can't tell a human... essentially who they can and can't marry.
Exactly.
It had nothing to do with sexuality. Yeah. It had to do with, I don't, you as a U.S. citizen, as long as they are consensual, you can marry them. And that opened up a different world that not necessarily that you have to be gay to be married to your same, you know, that you could now actually, like, get married for the benefits
that come
with it.
Well, it was a discrimination thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like, discrimination
like, against that the government can't tell me that you can ask me what my gender is.
That's right.
Like, right? That wasn't that
what
the,
it became a gender thing.
Loophole is, of it was that you didn't mm-hmm. get to ask what somebody's gender was.
Because I never have to
right.
put on my marriage certificate if I'm a man or a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right.
it doesn't
right.
matter
it doesn't
anymore.
Matter.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I think that who the lawyers and the people who mm-hmm. wrote that bill... Smart,
yep.
smart cookies.
It's true.
Okay, fluff questions.
Yeah, fluff
I'm just kidding. I'm
right. No, I know.
Yes. You are invisible for 24 hours.
Oh my
what
god!
What do you do with your time? And you can just like arrive wherever you need. You don't have to worry about the travel time. you don't have to waste your 24 hours.
Oh. Where would I be?
What do you want to do?
What do I want to do, man? That's a really good question. I thought this was fluff. That's
it
really good.
If you're Kate Gilchrist and you just want to be in the locker room.
Well, you know, that would be a... I could be in the Chiefs locker room. No, if I'm invisible, where would I want to be? Let's try to keep it clean, Dudley.
Only if you want to.
I would probably do something like be in New York City or maybe London. And it would be theater involved.
Mm-hmm.
Because I may shadow Bernadette Peters mm-hmm. on a Broadway stage.
Sure.
Or it doesn't have to be Bernadette. I mean, it could be
sure.
Hugh
but
Jackman.
Bernie's a good one.
Bernie's a good one.
Sure.
Or, you know, George Hearn in La Cage aux Folles. I would probably do some of those kinds of things. Maybe mm-hmm. hang out with a few of those people that without mm-hmm. them knowing I'm there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just to see like who they are.
Yeah, just mm-hmm. to see who they really are. You know, when I lived in New York City, I was able to meet several famous folks. And, you know, I would give my right arm to hang out with Carol Channing for a day and a half because I met her for a while. And mm-hmm. she's absolutely this incredible, fabulous, wonderful person.
Yeah.
And... or at least what I think she is. Everything I've heard about her is, and what I know of her is. And so maybe taking 24 hours and just being able to split it between London and New York mm-hmm. or something mm-hmm. like that and be with some of those fabulous people.
Yeah.
And make a stop by the locker room on my way home.
Yeah. For a nightcap.
For a little nightcap. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah.
I love that.
Uh-huh.
Back to my
serious questions.
Yeah.
No, I need a fluff one from you, Corey.
No, I don't have those.
Okay.
Because I like to get to know people in different ways. What is a piece of advice you would give yourself today? Not a week ago, a year ago, or in the future, but you're standing and you're talking to yourself or looking at yourself in the mirror. What is that piece of advice you give yourself today?
Oh, wow. This takes us to a completely different situation or a completely different place because the advice I would give myself today is to plan better for my old age.
Okay.
Because I'm not ready for it.
And you're not old.
Well, I'm getting there. But I'm not. Yeah. to probably prepare better. Mm-hmm. That's just a boring answer, I know.
But no, it's just not. As, you know. It's insightful. Why do you think you're not prepared?
Because I don't have enough money saved, and I don't have enough... I will work until... I will be like my dad, and I will work until I'm 93.
Yeah.
And, you know...
I figure I'm going to work until the day I die.
Yeah, just work until... and I'm not, you know... I enjoy my work, so... And I don't know what I would be doing at night. Welcome to Walmart. I don't know. I might be, you know... Walmart greeter. But, but I enjoy being with people, and I enjoy all that. So I also don't want to shut myself off and be, you know, somewhere else. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to be in my apartment by myself for very long periods of time.
I get that.
Yeah. So working is not necessarily a horrible thing to me.
Mm, that's fair.
I think we should buy a bar, Corey.
Okay.
Mm. Okay. Well, don't you think? Want to work for us?
Yep.
Sure.
You bet.
The Bell Tower Bar. We need one.
Okay. Well, we'll talk.
So, Courtney, if you have one more question, I'll ask my last two.
I do. All right. Okay. So what problem or situation did TV or movies make you think would be a much bigger deal in real life?
Oh, wow.
I can give you some examples.
Give me a couple examples. What?
Quicksand.
The ones I'm... What?
Quicksand.
Or what were those horrible worms that came up out of the sand?
In Beetlejuice?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe Jim Cleaver's pearls? I don't know. That's a problem for me. I'm just kidding. Wow. I think probably the scary things are what, you know, are going to be. Because I remember watching the Attack of the Killer Tomatoes over and over and over.
Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. Uh-huh.
You know, maybe things like huge mechanical sharks were going to come out of the audience. I mean, out of the ocean. And I'm sorry that they looked mechanical to me. I know they wouldn't be mechanical. But I think just a lot of the over... Well, we all know that.
Yeah.
Theater and movies do that a lot. Mm-hmm. We do the over... We make things bigger than they are. I mean, I'm in musical theater, folks. We break into song at any moment.
Right.
You know, it's like how
everyone knows the moves.
And that's a concern right there. Right. I mean, you know, that we would just break into song. No, but I think it's the over... The things like Jaws, the things like the giant worms that came out of the dunes.
Mm-hmm.
It was way before Beetlejuice. There were
Tremors.
Yes, Tremors. That's it. I'm very claustrophobic. So anything that you know, burying people alive, are like, oh my god. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I didn't know you were claustrophobic.
I don't want to be...
He's like, this room is now actually...
No, this room is okay. This room is fine. I wouldn't want to be in it.
Too much
terribly long, but I don't. But no, I'm perfectly fine at the moment.
Yeah.
But so anything where you know people are being buried alive, or you're, you know,
that's fair.
Those are those are the kind of things that I don't want to watch.
It is fascinating to me people's sort of answers with that. You know, in different ways. Courtney's daughter, oldest daughter Riley, essentially also talking to someone who is 17 years old and asking that question, and she said. High school, you know, like in movies and stuff, like what you like that there's one queen bee that rules the entire school and she doesn't, or that everyone goes to every party every weekend and just gets like shit faced.
Well, I kind of was that, so
but talking about that is some people's reality,
exactly
that,
right?
Like, you are sometimes it's the most popular kid in school, or you are going to those Kagers, but then there's also a whole different group of weirdos that don't give a shit about those.
Yeah.
Like, fun
and see, things. High school was such a different thing for me because it was in such a small town.
Yeah.
We knew everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, there were three towns that went to my class and there were 60 people in my class.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we knew every one of them.
Yeah.
You know? And so it was a completely different kind of situation for me, but it still had its own set of
Colleen
nightmares.
Tom is the one who, because I met Colleen and Dick before I went into high school. So I'm talking 7th to 8th grade whenever I really started to get to know them. And they were the ones essentially who told me that high school is going to be a place where everyone thinks that like this is it.
Yeah.
Like if you're not the most popular person or the or whatever, that it's going to affect
you're a failure.
The rest of your life. And so I remember them saying like, you have friends and family and experiences outside of those walls. And there's a lot of kids inside of high school who don't have that. So you've already seen what the other side, and I think theater helped with that. I saw professionals out there. And for me as a young gay man, I was just like, oh, there's people out there who can live who they want. Like, I felt like I was given such a gift to walk into high school to be like, none of this matters.
Yep.
And so I ended up, I think, having an extraordinary time in high school because I knew that there was something beyond graduation day.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So last two questions. Is there anything that you did not get to say or words of advice or something that you would like to tell our listeners that we didn't get to today?
No. I love you.
I love you.
I love you both.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I continue to just relish my time in theater because people that don't do it don't get it. They just don't understand it, and I feel sorry for them.
Okay.
And I don't feel sorry for them. I mean, they're perfectly happy in their own lives, and all of that is okay. But it truly is an experience that changes your life. Every one of them. I mean, every show. And we can talk about, oh, God, that show was a nightmare, or that show was fabulous, or that show was wonderful, or getting that one together was a nightmare, whatever. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the people and the relationships you build. And like we said a while ago, you know, how small the world is.
Yeah.
When you see these people in different places and you're able to connect again and able to do different things with them, whether that's going to church or going to work or going to, it doesn't matter what it is. it truly is, the arts are truly something that we've got to cherish.
Mm-hmm.
We have to.
And we get to do them. I was talking to Erica Baruth, who's playing Victor Victoria, in the show on my first rehearsal. And I, you know, and again, I said I sort of came into that process late. So you're just in the circle of it. You're like, oh, shit, lines are due, or I'm screwing up those.
Lines are due tomorrow.
You know,
yeah.
or whatever. And I was talking to her, and I was like, we are all so lucky that we're getting to, like, create. Or, like, whenever Courtney and I come to work here every day, I'm just like, I get to do this. Like, there are people out there who don't, and they can't, you know, for transportation purposes, go and do community theater,
right?
So that they just can't give up that time.
Yeah.
But the 17 of us that are in that room are getting to create, and we're doing it together, I have found new friends in that room that, as you've talked about, Dudley, I hope to run into 20 years down the road and be like, do you remember when we were doing Paris by Night together at the Asylum?
You mentioned Lisa Hickok a minute ago. Lisa used to do work with the Heartland Men's Chorus.
Yeah.
And when I was back with the Heartland Men's Chorus, it was like, we did chorus line together. Do you remember that? You know, and it's like, okay. And it's all about building relationships, and that's what life's kind of about.
Yeah, and I'm a people person like you are, so I definitely love collecting weirdos.
Yeah, I do too. An old colleague of mine in the Gala Chorus World, which is the international association of gay choruses that the Heartland Men's Chorus belongs to, I used to work with them a lot, and one of my colleagues there said, you know, I just wake up every day and I get to thank God that I get to be gay for a living.
Right.
and that's the way she put it, because she worked for a gay organization. She never had to hide who she was when she went to work. And every time she went on a trip, it was for the gay choral funds. And everybody knew, here she comes. And, you know, never had to hide any of that and was able to do the work to get past the other stuff and just do the work.
That's amazing.
And I always loved that. Kathy always said, I love that I just get to be gay for a living.
That may just be the title of this episode. Being gay for a living. So next week, I believe we are going to have Erica Baruth on the couch to discuss Victor Victorian opening night of that. But my last question is, who would you like to hear from on the couch? Who should we have on that to kind of get their backstory?
Mm-hmm. Now, is this a theater person?
It does not have to be. It just probably has to be someone I could get physically in the room.
Yeah.
Well, have you had Kip?
Not yet.
I think Kip Simmons would be a good person. He's been around the theater world in Kansas City forever. There's a new up-and-coming gay in town.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to kill me for saying that. But Eric Thomas is his name. He's with the AIDS Service Foundation.
He is.
Who else should you have? Sean Cullen would be an interesting
person
for you to have as the interim artistic director of the Heartland Men's Chorus. And, you know, he's getting his PhD or his doctorate, one of the two, whichever, in choral conducting at UMKC through the conservatory. He would be great. A younger perspective would be wonderful from Baker Purdon.
I want Baker on the show, too. Yeah, I love Baker.
I get to work with Baker at my church.
I love that you were literally listing everyone who's on my show.
Well,
list.
Let me see
but that other people have not said their names.
Have you had Valerie Martin yet?
I have not.
Oh my God, you got to have Valerie.
One of the hardest parts about this particular podcast is that we record during the day during the week. So there are people like Miles Worth who is in our show, who was also in Jesus Christ Superstar with us, who I have been trying to get on the show.
He's done like 20 shows in a row.
Right.
Yeah.
The man's always on stage.
So I would love to just like sit down and talk with him, but our schedules don't match up that way. Same way with Rachel Adcock. I've been trying to get her on the show.
Christoph Cording would be a good person.
Get to have on during Superstar.
I don't know if you've had Christoph Cording. He would be a wonderful person.
I have not either,
And I mean, I've delved into theater people here mostly, but... those are all phenomenal names in the art scene. Mm-hmm.
You're a phenomenal name in the art scene.
Your heart. Have you talked to Keith Wiedenkelder?
No.
At the J?
I should get Keith
on. Do you know who he is?
Nope.
Okay. I can put you in touch. Keith is the director of cultural arts or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Keith, I butchered your title. I don't know what your title is. He runs the theater part at the Jewish Community Center.
Yeah. They're doing Anything Goes
right now. And he would be... He's a wonderful guy. Wonderful guy. Great guy.
Right.
Good friend of mine. Yeah. Good guy.
Well, I love that. Well, thank you so much.
Yes.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. Yes. I'm honored.
I think, I got married, but I think my mom's favorite part of my wedding was getting to dance with you in your shoes on my dance floor. So I definitely think that you are a household name
in my bless your heart. I love your parents.
Mm-hmm. Yes. They're
you're lucky and blessed to have them.
Mm-hmm. We're lucky and blessed to have you.
Mm, thank you.
Yep. So tune in next week where we will have Erica Baruth on and get those tickets to... Victoria at the Barn Players. So thanks again, Dudley.
Yes, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. And that was this week's episode of Couch Chats. Thanks so much for listening. Couch Chats is available locally on KOJH 104.7 and also on iTunes. Remember, that's Couch with a K. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this episode are solely those of Couch Chats, not the Arts Asylum, KOJH, or Mutual Musicians Foundation. Thanks again for listening, and please remember to rate, review, and subscribe, as well as follow us on Instagram. Tune in next week to see who we have on the couch.